This episode of At the Eyepiece is sponsored in part by Audible.com. To receive a special offer just for our listeners, head on over to audibletrial.com/at the eyepiece to claim your 30-day trial plus one free audiobook download. Welcome to the At the Eyepiece Show. This is an astronomy-based podcast that is devoted to discussing astronomical equipment, stargazing tips, observing reports, and equipment reviews. We don't focus on the science of astronomy. There are plenty of shows that do that. The focus of At the Eyepiece is the visual observers, those backyard stargazers that enjoy taking their telescopes under the stars, and those individuals wishing to join our ranks. After all, what matters to stargazers is what's at the eyepiece. Hello out there, my fellow backyard stargazers. How you doing? This is John, your host of At the Eyepiece. It's been a little bit of a while. Sure hope that May turns out to be better than April has been for observing. Wow, I can't even, I don't think I can fill up an entire hand of the times that I've been able to go ahead and get out and actually do some observing. A lot of things that I've been doing, well, not really a lot, daytime observing, solar observing. I think I've had two opportunities this month to do that. The time of this recording is on the evening of the 26th, so as we progress here into May, I'm certainly hoping that May is going to give me more windows of opportunity to go ahead and get to some stargazing. So I sure hope that for you as well. Now, let's jump on in. NEAF 2015 that occurred, last week now. And let's go ahead and talk about NEAF and new products and some of the winners from NEAF 2015 that I can tell. And, you know, I do this show every single year, basically a review of NEAF. And I think I recall last year kind of positioning it that I thought that Skywatcher was one of the bigger wins, if you will, for NEAF 2014 with a lot of their products. And I have to tell you that they are really doing quite well this year's NEAF 2015. Let's go ahead and get started with a few of the new equipment from Skywatcher USA. Well, right off of the bat, they have been releasing a number of new optical tube assemblies. A lot of Maksutov Cassegrain telescopes and a larger Mac Newtonian. That's right, they're starting out with a 90mm, a 102mm, a 127, let's see, a 150, and a 180. These are all the Maksutov Cassegrain scopes. Now, these aren't necessarily new for the market. Certainly, they are from the perspective of Skywatcher. You will recall Orion had the 90, certainly the 150, the 180. I know that Meade, their ETX series has all of the 90, the 102, and the 127s. But this is certainly new for Skywatcher USA. And the biggest scope that they have is the 190mm Maksutov Newtonian. I really always wanted to look through one of those Maksutov Newtonians. You know, I remember not quite many years ago, but Intez Micro. These are Russian scopes that, while unfortunately, are no longer available. I'm sure that someone out there might be producing them, but they used to be sold from Russia, and there used to be a distributor down in Florida, but unfortunately, that is no more. So at least here, if I remember seeing some forums correctly, a lot of these are produced by Cinta now. And I'm glad to see that those are being offered from Skywatcher USA. So a lot of variety there for telescopes. But the new stuff doesn't end there. Nope, they have come out with a couple of new mounts as well. This one I'm really excited about, the Azimuth EQ5. This is a dual mode azimuth telescope that can, or mount rather, that can mount two scopes on either side for alt-azimuth electronic O2 functionality. You can also, of course, change it to equatorial mode. And that is quite impressive. Internal encoders, obviously, but what else here is a belt drive. So, belt drive is going to mean super smooth motion and no periodic error and no backlash. So that is going to be something nice for astrophotographers. Tying in well with astrophotography here, it actually has dual DSLR trigger system. For those of you that use DSLR for astrophotography, you don't have to carry around the other device to go ahead and initiate your trigger system. It works with two of these connections for Canon EOS controller. So that's, I'm sure, something that's grabbing the attention of DSLR astrophotographers out there. Of course, an internal polar alignment as well. No need for an external polar alignment scope. So that's a nice feature. And a really interesting pier tripod. It's kind of a half pier, half tripod kind of setup. It looks very, very sturdy and still quite portable and still very functional for an alt azimuth setup, in addition to something that can also be flipped very quickly to being in an equatorial mode. So very, very nice offering there, an interesting offering there. Now you get into the EQ6 Pro. Oh, by the way, the Azimuth EQ5 is at $1,350 currently. Now, the EQ6 Pro is their next offering with a 40-pound capacity. That is at $1,405. Again, you're going to have, a scope that is going to be using, I believe, servo motors instead of a belt drive, from what I can tell here. Internal polar scope and a dual mode saddle. That is the D or the V style of saddle, so that you can accommodate any one of those types of mounting plates if you need. By the way, the internal polar scope is internally illuminated, so that's going to be of good and easy use there for you. Two 11-pound counterweights is also included. So essentially, that EQ6 looks more or less like a similar to the Orion Titan. Atlas, rather. The Orion Atlas. So a couple of new mounts there from Skywatcher USA, but I'm not done. They have some more equipment. This is new. This is their Quattro series of imaging Newtonian scopes. 8-inch Quattro is at $610 with an F4. 10-inch Quattro is at $770 with an F4. And the 12-inch Quattro, $1,199. Again, all of these are imaging Newtonians for F4 focal ratio, and they also have an F4 coma corrector to improve the coma correction on these imaging Newtonians at $285. So they're really, Skywatcher, really doing quite well, I think, cranking out some new equipment for what it's worth out there. Hats off to him. Now, there was a number of things. We'll jump here over to Meade. And I was a little disappointed overall. The fact that Meade kind of has decided to go with these new LX series of scopes, because they're not really... They're more of an economical series of equatorial mount scopes. They are at a very good price point, but they're non-computerized German equatorial mounts. These are completely manual slow motion control mounts. But from an aperture wise and getting into astronomy, you know, I guess this would work out fairly well, but I'm disappointed that there's not anything for a computer, you know, and go to with these scopes. But that being said, these are the Meade LX70 series of scopes. They have a 5-inch refractor at $699. Their reflector, 6 inches, $639. They have an 8-inch reflector on this mount for $699. Jump up into a 6-inch Maksutov for $1,099.95. And, of course, you do have the option of getting this German equatorial mount. Now, this isn't really a bad deal. Meade LX70 German equatorial mount, again, with slow motion controls, but I'm betting that they might have some type of electronic computerized go-to, possibly in the works. Don't know that for sure, but I would think that they would be smart to do that. Anyway, this mount is for $399.95. That's what I could tell was the newer offerings out there from Meade at NEF 2015. Let's go over to Teleview. Teleview Delights. That's right, a new series of eyepieces from Teleview. Now, these are 62-degree apparent field of view, and they are basically a lightweight, more economical version from what I could see of the Delos. From my understanding of their entire growth of these eyepieces, of course, the Ethos, get to the Delos. These are a lighter, more economical approach, the D-Lights here. Let me go ahead and see if I can find a price point for these particular eyepieces for you. They look, of course, they're Teleview, so they are going to be very good as far as build quality. And I thought I had an eyepiece price here listed for you. By the way, they do currently have a 7mm, 11mm, and the 18.2 millimeter eyepieces as far as that focal length in the D-Light series. But I don't find anything on pricing yet from their sites, as of yet, at least. But you know that there's going to be some quality eyepieces there. 20mm eye relief on the 7mm Delight with, again, 62-degree apparent field of view. Again, you're going to have a 20mm eyepiece or eye relief on the 11. And let's see here, the 18.2. Web's site's a little bit slow here. Is also 20mm. So you bet those are going to be pretty popular for Meade, or for Teleview rather, when they come out. And I will be sure to go ahead and pop up any pricing information that I find on those when it becomes available. Now, let's go over to, I won't say one of the things that disappointed, but one of the things that I know that there was some buzz on was Ioptron. And in particular, the Ioptron CEM120. This is a 120-pound payload capacity, centrally balanced equatorial mount. Basically, the bigger brother to the CEM-60. This mount, however, has not yet been released, but I will say from Astronomics' website, they do have some of their, looks like, pre-ordering available. This mount itself for $5,498, coming to America the fourth quarter in 2015, so it's a ways off for that particular mount, but that's okay. They also came out with a tripod from Ioptron. Let me go ahead and bring that up as well. Ah, there we go. Yes, so Ioptron and their Tri-Peer. This is a $599 pier, no doubt heavy duty. They showed it at NEF with their CEM-60, but I'm betting that it's probably going to be capable of also supporting the CEM-120. At least that's what my suspicion is for that particular mount as well. Starlight showed one very interesting Starlight Refractors, by the way. This is a company in UK that makes really beautiful long focus refractors. showed an interesting concept here. Now, I'm sure this wasn't at NEEF, but I'm going to share this anyway. This was a refractor, 101 millimeter F-15 refractor that actually you can take apart, put into a briefcase. It's for ultimate portability, basically. Very, very cool. Now, there's been a number of companies, I think, that have tried perhaps this concept. Maybe one other company that has tried this concept, but it looks like Skylight really has done an exceptionally good job on this particular concept. It's designed to be self-aligning, and of course, after regular post-assembly, you do want to go ahead and do checks, and of course, the cell is adjustable. So if you wanted to lug out, no doubt what's going to be a very long instrument, what a cool way to go ahead and break it up into three separate parts, and it can be put into a trunk of a car, it shows here. So that's an interesting concept here, and I don't think they were at NEEF. Haven't seen anything, but I wanted to share that anyway. Now, let's get over to some other offerings that I see. Stellar View, their SVS-130 F5 sextuplet, also uses a temperature-compensating Optek 3-inch focuser. That was in an introductory price of $69.95 at NEEF. Quark. Now, there has been a lot of stuff I've been finding here with Daystar and these Quark solar hydrogen alpha, essentially eyepieces. I guess eyepiece maybe wouldn't be a good way to describe them. They're an accessory that you would use with your eyepiece. But anyway, a lot of these Quarks have been doing exceptionally good. So Daystar has come out with no doubt a winner for their Quark. And it looks like that they've come out with one that is optimized for F-15 Questars. Now, I kind of scratched my head with this because I thought it was a very small market that they would be kind of shooting for with a optimized Quark that was specifically designed to be used and mated with the F-15 Questars. But hey, you know, that's what they're working on. That's what they released. But from some of the rumor mill, they are also apparently designing one to be used with F-10 Schmitz. So that is going to be a huge hit with them if they do. I've been seeing a lot of astro images out there with these Quarks and very, very good stuff with those. So hats off to Daystar for that. Okay, last but not least here, we come to one that was a surprise for me. It's really garnishing quite a bit of an excitement, at least from the videos and from, now granted, I know some of this is market material, but I truly think that the response that Denkmeyer got from users that were using this eyepiece, not only at NEEF, but also at, obviously when they were stargazing at some type of dark sky or at least some type of observing site, really looks to be quite impressive and very exciting to me. This is the Denkmeyer Optical Presents the LOA 21, L-O-A 21. Now, this is a 3D eyepiece combination. Okay? Now, there's going to be a video because, frankly, it's much easier to understand what I'm talking about here if you check out the video. And if you look up my YouTube channel, John Kramer, or at the eyepiece, you're going to find a video grouping called NEEF 2015. And I'll have links to really all the interesting videos that I found out there for NEEF 2015, all in kind of one group. This is one of those. And this was really quite interesting. Apparently, it's a pair of eyepieces that are used, and they give a very subtle 3D effect when used, obviously, through separate Denkmeyer bino viewers. And they are being described as being able to see, for instance, a galaxy in your eyepiece, and being able to tell the 3D effect that certain stars appear closer to you than for perhaps the galaxy itself. And then if you turn it 180 degrees, one of these eyepieces, it creates the opposite effect to where maybe the galaxy appears closer to you and the stars appear further away. It really sounds fascinating. And by the reviews or the users out there that have seen these in action, albeit a handful, the effect on them is quite remarkable. Wow, and a game changer are some of the things that I've heard. So that's really exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing this in the hands of some fellow backyard stargazers and getting out there and using it. Now, this is in addition to a Bino viewer. So, for example, the Binotron 27 that Denkmeyer has. The Lau 21 can be added to an option for the Bino 27. This is at a purchase discount of $449. For previous Denkmeyer 27 or Denkmeyer Bino viewer customers who have purchased directly through them, you can go ahead and get it at a discount of $489. And for other users that have other brands of Bino viewers or secondhand Denk Bino viewers, your retail cost on that is $599. So right now it looks to go ahead and be shipping out or at least delivery. Yeah, about shipping out of these unique eyepiece combinations in late June of this year. So that's good. And the specs on these are 21 millimeter focal length, the 65 degree apparent field of view, 5 element fully multi-coated optics, 3 ounces each eyepiece. That's a total of 7 ounces for this pair, 12 millimeter eye relief, and let's see, each pair will be assembled by Russ and signed with a certificate guaranteeing their quality. The array is figured to a lambda of 10 or better. And this is pretty exciting. There's been a lot of things that come out for the visual observers out there, eyepieces, etc. But I know of nothing that comes close to what this particular pair of eyepieces promises to deliver, which is a true 3D experience. The other thing that jumped out at me during the interviews that he had at NEEF was one of the users that viewed through this eyepiece said, this is going to be something that changes people's perspective specifically for outreach, because not only they will truly get an idea of the 3D element of viewing, for example, a galaxy and having this 3D look to it of where the galaxies appear to be more distant than the actual stars. It's really exciting. I really, really am interested to see this in action. Of course, I would love to be able to go ahead and look through these things myself. For the visual observer, that's really, really cool. So my hat's off to Denkmeyer for coming out with something that is really, truly unique. The Lau 21, a set of eyepieces to be used with the Bino viewer and to give you a truly 3D experience at the eyepiece. Very, very neat. So let's go ahead and let's start talking about some things to get at the eyepiece of your telescope coming up for the month of May. And being that this is pretty close to April, well, this is exactly April 26th at the time of this recording. We just passed first quarter moon. That was on the 25th last night. We have, of course, full moon coming up on May 3rd. Your third quarter moon is going to be May 11th. And your new moon, May 17th. With first quarter again, May 25th. Now, let's go ahead and speaking of the moon, I want to go ahead and share some of the Lunar X dates something that I figured I would add here into our observing discussions for those that are interested. All right, so we coming up actually on May 25th at this year. Eastern Standard Time is about your best time. May 25th at 10:55 Eastern Standard Time. That's 9:55 Central Time, 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's going to be a time that you want to mark your calendars. Try to track down the Lunar X. Now, let's jump off to our next object. Of course, we're going to be talking about the Sun, our closest star. Now, I will say last week was a wealth of great stuff going on in the Sun. Right now, in fact, it was just last week, a couple of days ago, I'm thinking like on the 24th, maybe even the 23rd, just a huge solar prominence. And there has been, over the last 2 weeks, a number of fantastic active regions to go ahead and check out as well. So let's talk about some white light active regions that you might be able to go ahead and spot for yourself, of course, with the proper filters on your telescope. Currently, you have active region 2331 approaching the western limb of the Sun, with 2327 trailing behind. Small solar group that is, to the southeast of 2327 may be developing. Currently at this initial image here that I'm looking at through SolarHam on the 26th here, it's just a small sunspot itself. It hasn't even been designated with a particular active region number, but something perhaps to keep an eye on. Then approaching meridian is 2333. Now, starting back off at 2331, that's a larger sunspot group, fairly decent. No doubt it's going to go ahead and provide some good detail in the eyepiece. 2327 is smaller than the 2331 complex, but a single sunspot with a noticeable penumbra. As you go on over to 2333, really no umbras that I can see, just about three, maybe even four smaller sunspot groups that possibly will develop into something better for us. So that's your sun activity here, up and coming for this week. And I'm going to go ahead and make sure that I cover those as we move forward. Now let's go ahead and talk about some of the objects that I did get to go ahead and view. And I wanted to go ahead and share with you, in particular, galaxies on the edge. These are going to be my recommended observing targets for this month. Now, I did observe these initially. It was back in March. March was a really good month, actually, for me, as far as observing goes, because I did have some really good opportunities to get out and observe for myself. And, of course, let's go ahead and start off with a couple here. Let me go ahead and bring up my application, bring up these star maps here. And we will go ahead and, there we go. I got five galaxies to go ahead and try here to go ahead and spot in the eyepiece of your telescope. Or if you are a Mallencam user or a Lodestar user or whatever instrument or camera combination that you use for a lot of electronically assisted observing, go ahead and try to track these objects down for yourself. Now, these are well placed right now at about 11 p.m. local time. We'll start off with the Spindle Galaxy. This is NGC 3115. This is at magnitude 8.89 in the constellation of Sextans. Now, this particular, all of these are obviously going to be edge-on galaxies. So my interesting image here that I captured, a live screen grab of NGC 3115, shows a medium-sized elongated image, a very bright central core, but rather small and condensed, almost star-like. And speaking of stars, on the left portion of this nucleus, and of course your parent image could, or at the eyepiece, your particular image could be slightly different than mine, a very small star that was, just outside of the nucleus itself, but very clearly, visible in a brief 30-second exposure. Quite neat, quite interesting to add for that aspect of NGC 3115. Next up, as we continue here with some cool edge-on galaxies, we're going to move on over to LEO. This is NGC 3190 in the constellation LEO. Now, this is going to be a number of galaxies in the field of view for you here. But let's start off with NGC 3190. Should be the largest, and of course, we're going to be talking about it's going to be edge-on. Now, this one is quite interesting because it does have a noticeable dust lane that goes underneath of it, or in my particular view, to the southwest of the nucleus. And again, this is a much broader diffuse nucleus in this particular edge-on galaxy, but it still has a much bigger brightening towards its core. And you really should be able to tease out the dark dust lane from this one. It looks to be quite interesting if you can capture it. Now, you will have about four other galaxies in the field of view, but they're going to be a challenge. Let's start off with 3190 is going to be at a magnitude 11.2. Closest to it, you're going to have NGC 3187 at 13.4. You're going to have NGC 3193 at 10.9, and you are also going to be able to see, possibly, NGC 3185 at 12.2 magnitude. Now, in my, let's see my exposure here, 60 seconds exposure with my Lodestar camera, this is a live shared online view, I could easily make out, obviously, 3190. And the other galaxies were a bit more challenging. In particular, 3185, that stood out fairly well. And you can see just a hint of spiral to that particular galaxy. 3187 was probably the dimmest, and that would go along with its magnitude at 13.4. And 3193 looks to be more basically just a brightening spot, essentially, in my initial exposure. So try to track those down and see how they appear for you at the eyepiece or in your imager or viewer of choice. Okay, next up is the Needle Galaxy. This one is NGC 4565 in the constellation Coma Berenices. This is at magnitude 9.6. Now, you may also go ahead and pick up a couple of others in this particular field of view. Let me go ahead and bring up my image here that I captured live and shared online as well through, of course, Night Skies Network here. Had a, like I said, pretty active month in March that I was able to go through and enjoy. So there we go. So actually, no, the Needle Galaxy, that pretty much framed very, very well with me in the eyepiece. I was really surprised of just how well I could pick up a lot of the dust lane going through not only the bright center, but extending out. And this is definitely has a very, not a broad core, a very almost star-like core, but it is diffuse. And the interesting thing is that it's diffuse more in an egg shape rather than just a simple elongation. The galaxy itself extends, the disks themselves extends way out, and it fills, it frames perfectly with my particular smaller imager. There's also a very interesting cascade of stars. Let's see, five or six stars that I can make out that are framed in there well, that can pretty much are at a 45-degree angle to the actual plane of the galaxy. A beautiful, beautiful example of a edge-on spiral galaxy with just wondrous detail within those arms. Let's move on next to our next galaxy here. And we are continuing, let's see here, 4754 rather. This is a edge-on galaxy in the constellation Virgo. And I actually just noticed that I actually had those misnumbered. It should be 4762. This is NGC 4762. In the same field of view, you're going to have more or less an elliptical or slightly face-on almost spiral galaxy of 4754. But the one that really stands out, it's going to be 4762. This is magnitude 10.3. Now, this galaxy is very easy to see. Again, your central dust lane going through it. Very, very flat galaxy. Not a very large diffuse core at all, really. It's more of a star-like core appearance in there, but the entire galaxy itself is very bright. It doesn't really taper off as you get further near the edges. That's what's very interesting about this. It's almost as if you have a line of light, if you will, with a very distinct, bright, smallish core. And unlike the Needle Galaxy, it does not extend above or below the plane itself. It's just really in line. Longer exposures, however, will actually show you more of an S-wispy tail to either side of this galaxy, which makes it very interesting. And in my brief, I think this is a 60-second exposure, I have just a hint of the continuation of the disks themselves as they go out and twist up in one direction on one end of the galactic plane, and then the other direction with the other side of the galactic plane. It's very, very interesting to go ahead and see long exposures. You'll go ahead and see exactly what. Now, it's not pronounced, meaning it's not whipping around at, you know, like a 90-degree whip. It's very, very subtle, but you should still be able to pick those up. Now, let's go ahead to our final galaxy, I believe, on our list. And that is going to be another galaxy. And this one is 4302. This is another edge-on galaxy in the constellation Coma Berenices. This is at magnitude 11.6. And for my appearance visually here, you will have another galaxy in the field of view. Let me go ahead and bring those up here. I believe that is the one. Yeah, 4302. Okay, now this particular galaxy is a much more, it's a dimmer, it's not quite as bright as the galaxy that I previously mentioned, but it is a thicker line of light, if you will, in the eyepiece. And what you're wanting to tease out is definitely a distinct dust lane that appears to go all the way from one side of the disc all the way through the central core, which, by the way, is not very bright at all. It's just a slight brightening near the central core and down through the other side. Next to it is essentially a spiral galaxy, not quite face-on, with a, again, very slight brightening near its core with just a hint of some spiral activity in that. Makes for a very, very pleasing, however, view, no doubt, at the eyepiece or through your imaging device, no doubt. So those are some of my recommended objects for you to track down, galaxies on edge for the month of May. Now, of course, moving on to our planets, we do have a number of events here, notable on Jupiter, and I did get some good feedback on this from a number of listeners, so I'm going to go ahead and continue to go ahead and share some interesting times on Jupiter. You want to go ahead and mark down your calendar here. Now, I will point out that our Jupiter observing window is getting smaller and smaller, so take advantage right now. While it is noticeably dark right now at, decently dark at about 8 p.m. right now, and Jupiter is pretty much right above or at its highest place in the meridian there. So get out and observe Jupiter while you still can, because as we progress through May, it's going to be getting harder and harder to observe Jupiter high enough above the atmospheric distortion, as well as with darkness, because of course our days are going to be getting a little bit longer through there. So let's start out with our Jupiter events for the month of May. Now, really and truly, it looks like we don't have any decent events on Jupiter until May 15th. Now, when I say decent events, where it's really high enough, 20 degrees at least above the horizon, and dark enough, very, very important. Now, Great Red Spot Transit, May 15th, starting at 9:38 p.m., ending at 11:09 p.m. when it is just 24 degrees. By the way, these are all in Central Time, so go ahead and adjust for your local time. May 17th, 8:37 p.m., Europa mid-transit point, 53 degrees above the horizon, 70% dark at that time. May 17th, continue, you have a Great Red Spot Transit at 9:46 p.m. It's mid-transit while it's 40 degrees above the horizon and about 80% dark. 11:17 p.m., mid-transit, Jupiter's getting lower and lower, 21 degrees, but it's 75% dark by then. May 20th, 7:06 p.m., you have the Great Red Spot still visible, but you still got plenty of light to fight at that time. And by 8:47 p.m., mid-transit point, while Jupiter is 49 degrees above the horizon, and at 10:19, it's last visible. May 20th again, Io transit. At 8:15, mid-transit point, and last visibility is at 9:23 p.m. May 22nd, 8:56 p.m., Great Red Spot Transit, first visible, 46 degrees above the horizon, still 77% dark. And then at 10:27 p.m., mid-transit point, and it's 28 degrees above the horizon, still approximately the same percentage of darkness there. No doubt that could pose some challenges for you to visually see the very subtle coloration in that Great Red Spot, by the way. May 24th, 9:46 p.m., Europa begins its transit. Jupiter is 35 degrees above the horizon, 77% dark. Then at 11:13, it's mid-transit point. Jupiter's really low, though, at 17 degrees above the horizon. May 27th, you have a Ganymede shadow transit. Starts at 7:58 p.m. Jupiter is 58 degrees above the horizon, but it's only 22% dark at that time. However, being that these are shadow transits, you might have some good capability to go ahead and still spot these. Now, continuing, 9:47 p.m. on the 27th mid-transit point, and that's when it's at 32 degrees above the horizon. It ends at 11:36, but Jupiter is just a scant 10 degrees above the horizon at that time. Also on the 27th at 9:01 p.m., you also have a Io shadow transit beginning. So you have a little bit of overlap there. So mark your calendars for May 27th. Looks like you're going to have a two shadow transit if you can catch it. It begins at 9:01 p.m. for Io. Jupiter is 42 degrees above the horizon, but it's only 70% dark at that time. 10:10 p.m. It's about at its mid-transit part. Jupiter is 28 degrees above the horizon. And by 11:19 p.m., Jupiter's only 14 degrees above the horizon when Io transit leaves for that. And that actually is the wrap-up for Jupiter events for the entire month of May. That gives you enough height above the horizon to enjoy these appearances as well as darkness. All right, everyone, I want to make sure that you enjoyed this episode of At the Eyepiece. If you have any suggestions for future show topics, please kick me off an email to attheeyepiece@gmail.com. Make sure you check out the blog. You can head on over to attheeyepiece.blogspot.com or attheeyepiece.org. I'm going to go ahead and be starting to kick up the blog also a little bit more with sharing some At the Eyepiece objects every single week, just ones that I've observed with pictures, finder charts, etc., to add a little bit more, let's just say a little bit more good content there to the blog site. Also, please head on over to Night Skies Network. Be sure to say hello next time you're at Night Skies Network, enjoying some of the live views online of amateur equipment from all over the world, really. And, of course, my channel there is At the Eyepiece. Don't forget all of these videos that I've been able to find with NEEF 2015. If you head on over to my YouTube channel, John Kramer with a K, or At the Eyepiece, you'll go ahead and you'll find one of those video lists called NEEF 2015. You can go ahead and find those videos there, so be sure to check that out as well. Hey, coming up on our next episode of At the Eyepiece, we're going to be talking about the Worldwide Solstice Festival happening June 21st, 2015, a day dedicated to solar observing and solar science, so you don't want to miss that. Also be talking about a brand new camera from Mellencam. All that and more coming up. So here's wishing you plenty of clear skies so that we can all talk about it next time at the Eyepiece. Thank you for listening to this episode of At the Eyepiece. If you would like to participate in a future show as a featured guest, or perhaps you have suggestions for future show topics, send me an email at theeyepiece@gmail.com. Check out our blog at theeyepiece.blogspot.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just put in a search for At the Eyepiece. I'd like to thank George Wood for his bumper and exit music. This is 8-Bit Junkie, and we obtained that from PodSafeAudio.com. So here's wishing all of you plenty of clear skies so that we can all talk about it next time at the Eyepiece.